Hey everybody, I'm John Bollinger with Marrera Guitar. I'm with Greg Patterson. We are at the Bridgestone in Nashville, and we're going over Brian Adams' rig. Hey, Craig, thanks so much for having us.
Pleasure, John.
Great seeing you, man.
Thank you for coming by.
Oh, God, it is a thrill for me to be here with you and this guitar. Tell me about it.
This is our 53295 that Brian's coveted for quite a few years now, and it's one of three vintage ones we have that are just such a joy to play. And also, they're so expressive. P90s, all, you know, essentially sings all degrees all the time.
It was shocking. I just heard you playing it on stage during soundcheck. God, and it sounds great.
It's got all the glory inside of it. Easy to play.
And yeah, it's sings. When I see that, I picture Scotty Moore, but what you were doing, it sounds like Brian Adams. So when did he make the switch? I remember back in the day, Strat, Les Paul, occasionally.
That was the 80s, yeah. And I believe 93-ish, he picked himself up one of these. We have it over in Europe, and it's just a lovely, lovely guitar that's become integral to his everything. He's iconic with him.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe Gibson's happy to sell more 295s because of Brian.
Right. But, I'm sure they are. Well, yeah. So have you made any tweaks to this thing as far as, like, is it all stock basically?
100%, but electronics, structurally, all the original. The only thing I did change was I put Waverly's on the back.
Good idea.
Just the stability.
Yeah.
I don't want to be an endorser, but they have made my life really great and easy as a guitar technician. I can rely on them.
Sure.
And the artist has more faith in what the guitar can do and how long it can go, maybe 6-7 songs without having to tweak it.
Right.
In the right environment. These things are so solid.
A 73-year-old Clouson.
Yeah.
Is kind of vulnerable.
Unfortunately, yeah, it does. Yeah. It has fallacy for sure.
Yeah. Well, and as far as, like, you know, to keep a vendor's instrument in top shape, putting that in the case for later is not a bad idea.
Just having to reset those tangs all the time, became a thing. So I was like, let's give it a little bit of authentic look, but yet all the functionality of a modern, stable guitar that's going to, you know, Brian appreciate playing many songs as he wants to without having to consider, is it gone pitchy or not?
Right.
I don't even have compensation on this thing, and it still sings.
No kidding. Isn't that
and
amazing?
Voices beautifully.
So that's 53 technology.
And it's just applied as it should be. And
wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Brian has a very strong right hand.
Yeah, it looks like a sledgehammer.
That's an analogy.
Because when you see him, he's a very animated dude.
And he's very, very succinct with how he hits those chord notes. It just rings. So we raise the action a little bit because the oscillation of the string.
Yeah.
I'm not doing as much fret work.
Yeah.
Yeah. As you would on a vintage guitar, you really want it to be, you know, not as, we want to change too much.
Sure.
Right.
So what strings are you using?
Labella have been the most
really
amazing support ever.
What gauge?
Custom gauge to the boy, both gentlemen. Brian is 12, 14, 17, 30, 40, 50.
Wow.
Keith over the other side, 18 on the G.
Wow.
Instead of a 17. That's the only variation. But
are you kidding?
The Strats are amazing. They're so stable with that. This baby just sounds amazing with them.
Keith is playing the strings that heavy as well?
Yeah. But have you seen Keith Scott? My man is a strong dude.
I mean, those
he can wield a guitar like there's nobody's
that
business.
That is like Stevie Ray Vaughan territory. But 100%. Are you in standard?
Yes, we are. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's a 63 that he's using as his main over there too.
Wow.
Yeah. Not to get into too much.
Okay. Well, that.
Sorry.
That is shocking. That is shocking.
A little crossover there.
Okay, so for the most part, Brian is on this guitar.
Yeah, for any kind of electric stuff. We were using a Strat for a long time for the run to use.
Yeah.
But we've now turned where Brian's playing bass now, and 60% of the set, keyboard players covering a little of the Moog bass otherwise. So the Strat got a little bit of a time to relax and not retired, but yet it's sitting, always waiting to be pulled out if needed. And then we got a lovely Fender P-Bass from
Okay.
The people at Fender, but
hey, well, okay. Before we jump into those, I want to see. Can we show the brother to this one?
For sure.
The 295.
The 295. This is always on standby. A beautiful, beautiful example.
Wow.
Yeah, and the same modifications, just to keep it structurally reliable on the road as well. Fret work we only do is the first 6 to 7 frets, and we go stainless because of lack. We just don't want to be doing fret work all the time.
So, yeah, you're right.
And
yeah.
They're so stable, and it didn't change the timbre. These guitars just have a beautiful sound to them.
Do they sound identical-ish?
Within, I try to set them up as best I can. I'd say there's a nominal difference, but it would probably be a player feel thing than anything. So it's not a tonality aspect. I think they're very close.
Wow.
Yeah.
Love it. Do you have feedback issues at all?
No, I don't believe that we ever have to, unless he's well in front of the PA. Yeah. And I'm also operating, so I change his gain structures and also manipulate his dynamic levels and his treble booster. So we don't ever get any 2K above feedback because I'm bringing the treble booster down on solos as I'm bringing the gains up for the harmonic distortion.
Wow. That's a good tech. that's on it.
Yeah. I'm trying to be as assistive as best I can for a player that he's got so much to worry about when he's singing, delivering those lyrics. Yeah. He doesn't need to think about guitars. Yeah. So I'm trying to make sure he's as comfortable as possible up there.
Yeah, very cool. Mm. Okay, let's take a look at these Martins.
Ooh, we got some special babies here.
Yeah, these D18s, right?
This is our 54.
Wow.
This is one of the last ones we acquired in the past 10 years. Brian owns a guitar that was Johnny Cash's. And we used it on our acoustic tour from 2011 to 2014 as our main, it's the benchmark of the perfect acoustic.
Yeah.
So this was my last acquisition trying to find another 54/55 with the right bracing, the right tonality and the scoop to the mid. And this is the thing. It's got a nice softness, but it's also got a very distinct note articulation at the same time.
So. It seems like the D18 is like the bluegrass.
It's the workman's. It just does the work all the time and flawlessly.
What pickup do you have in it?
It's the original versions. I bought up 10, 20 of them of the Fishman Natural One.
Oh, really?
It's so. Some people go, "What are you doing?" Yeah. I'm like, it's reliable. Every sound engineer I've worked with is always like, I know what to expect. I know what to do with this. This is the places to go. Yeah. And we have very reliable response every time. So,
that's great.
Yeah, whether it's in wedges when we're doing the acoustic show or in ears, just sits in the mix right.
Are they difficult to find today?
I find them in luthier shops and stuff like that. It's like, I took this one out of this guitar. The guy wanted another brand or different manufacturer. And you go, that preamp's mine. But Fishman's been very supportive. If I need any new stuff, they send it to me. And you can manipulate those to acquire, take the position if you need to. And you have to change your filaments every few years just because there's so much abrasion on there.
Sure. Right? So, so let's see. Can we see the twin to this one?
Yeah, that's the 57.
And this is just kind of a redundancy in case. Or different tuning.
It's not even a different tuning. It's just a backup for string breaking, which hopefully never happens. Yep. But if it does,
we get a sledgehammer right hand.
I work in my greatest degree to make sure that it resists all of that. Yeah. But this one has a little bit of a brighter timbre to it. So it's got a little bit more of a sharper, quicker note than that one. It's a little bit softer, but it's wood and it's natural, beautiful. I think the bracing is actually a little bit more in a forward position than this one, than the other one. That's where the scoop isn't.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just talking with Martin, there were so many variations in development over those years.
Oh, sure.
Beautiful guitars. We have a 46 in Europe that's just like unbelievable.
Wow. Yeah.
But a smaller body, a little more taut, and so focused.
Yeah.
Like it sounds amazing in a band mix.
Huh.
Yeah.
What strings are you running on this?
These are Labella. Light gauge,
yeah.
Phosphorons, beautiful, reliable. Huh.
Yeah, let's see this bass.
All right.
So for a while, they're going out as just a three-piece, right? With Brian Payne?
20-odd years ago, yeah, they were doing that when he had decided to get back into, he had taken a little sabbatical.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, this is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
The stories I've been told by Keith is as they started getting back into it, it was like, wow, we're having a good time. Let's keep doing this. And he's had bass players over the years, but last year he was just like, I feel like changing it up a little bit. And he did a gig and played bass for 90% of it. And it was just like, wow, what a great band. The music's amazing. What else do you need?
Yeah, right.
And he's very proficient at it. And he's great. So we've just developed this into another sonic profile for him.
Boy, and what a testament to his musicianship that he can sing and switch between, because singing and playing bass,
most definitely,
yeah, is like a huge adjustment.
Most definitely,
when you've been doing it on guitar for decades.
Yeah, and we've had Dave Evelson from Megadeth come by a few shows and just like, "What, Ryan's an amazing bass player." And I was like, not to quote Dave, but it was just like, "Yeah, man, it's right on."
That's great. And so this, tell me about this this P bass.
Billy Siegel just sent it to us to Vegas about a month and a half ago.
Oh, so it's brand new to the team right now?
Yeah, this was just like, we need a really cool P bass immediately.
Yeah.
Our 59 was going elsewhere on tour, and he wanted to get it back in the studio anyway. And this shows up, and it was so light, so just integral, just a little tweak here and there.
Yeah.
We put flat wounds on it because he enjoys those.
Yeah.
And it just sang immediately. And
so with flat wounds, can you just go forever without changing those strings?
He prefers not to. He loves the thunk.
Yeah.
The depth of it, you want to, without going to nylon tape or anything, but
we're not doing
reggae, but we're close enough. But I'm using the Ampeg SGT, and I can get some tons of growl out of it if I need it. And we can get some rip and rock and roll sounds and pop sounds.
Oh, that's
whatever
good.
We need.
Do you ever use that hip shot, the drop?
All the time.
Really?
Yeah, he's got it. 69s does it.
Sure.
There's a couple of more tracks on it that he just drops it down. And it's like, cut circuit knife.
Yeah. So he'll do that live on stage and not have to check tuning or anything like that and just go.
I'm one listening. I'm making sure. I'm biasing all this to make sure he's there. Because we're working against the keyboard.
Sure.
So perfect tuning all this.
Yeah.
And then we got Keith Scott, who's perfect tuning as well. So we're always trying to keep it at a high level.
Sure.
If we can. Just because they deserve it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's see this Strat. And so this is just kind of for guests tonight, just in case.
This is a recreation that the custom shop made for Brian a good 20 years ago, and it looks almost brand new.
Yeah.
Because he has a 1960, our actual guitar that they modeled off.
Oh, cool.
So the 60 is over in Europe, and this is the recreation of it, and it's just been riding with us for a while and tweaking it as we go along, and it's got all that strattiness you ever want.
Yeah.
And it's gorgeous.
Is that a three-way switch on it?
Five-way, because we like to use the second position always.
I saw the
just for safety on strumming. So.
Yeah, that the Strat bridge can be a little much.
Yeah. It can be, yeah. And it's that 2 to 3K spike is just so needs to be hollowed out a bit, right? So instead of doing it after the fact, we do it on the guitar, and it hits the amps and the amp models really nicely. So.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Okay, very cool guitars. Let's talk about amps and that kind of stuff. Okay, so tell me what's going on here.
This is the heart and soul of Brian's guitar rig.
Good.
We're quite lucky to have a Pete Cornish assembly control surface. It's essentially four inputs. We can select which ones, how much gain input structure to it. Overall, we've got a distortion inside, a loop available, which I've put an overdrive or a Mutron as well. So for certain songs, he would do some special effects. I've got independent distribution to two amplifier models, because we used to use a Vox and a JTM 45 live, and they would sit here.
I bet that was loud.
I baffled and used a Randall Silent Sister.
Yeah.
So that JTM 45 in there, baffled off AC30 because you can't put them in a box because they need to breathe.
They run hot. Yeah.
They need to breathe. And brown box, of course. So everything was at 115 volts.
Oh.
I'm that person, unfortunately.
No, I get it. Yeah,
I'm into that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Running an amplifier because we'd go thermal by a 2.5 hour, 2 hour set.
Sure.
The end of the night, we're trying to play Summer 69 and it's just mushy.
Sure.
You keep it at 115, you've got 2 hours of stable amplifier that's not overheating.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So Pete, at one point we needed a distribution. So we have a selector box that he made one for Paul McCartney. And he was like, oh, I've got one of those designs. I'll send you one over. Thankfully, it was a great solution.
Yeah, good enough for Sir Paul.
Yeah, and his Pete Cornish quality is going to be amazing. And he recreated this entire rack for us for our European rig. And we have everything duplicated, guitars as well as the whole amplifier structure.
Got to be so great to go across the pond and
I just walk in
there.
And it's like, there's all my stuff. It's very good. I'm quite lucky in that. And then, like, we're driving them into fractals. It's the same idea. I just spent a millennia. We did some captures, but I spent a lot of time in hotel rooms with a gold guitar and the fractals going, what does an AC30 sound like again? What's a JTM 45 sound like?
Yeah, right.
And then got to a point where we were, like, two or three shows, we were using it and we were flying. We were just running with it and we haven't looked back.
Because consistent every night.
So much cartage cost has dropped. All those aspects of it gives us the affordability to do so many other things visually for the...
Sure.
And we don't have as much backline. You see that we do have a bass amp on stage. For.
I love that though. I love seeing that.
Me too.
Bass
we need reactive speakers.
Yeah.
And we need it happening just to get the vibe on stage.
Yeah, right? And I bet feeling that thump.
Oh, a little bit of sympathetic is coming at you. You feel great. So. Yeah. That's kind of the coupling of this. I use a fold-back monitor back there. That's a flat response thing. It just gives me the feeling that I had the amplifiers here before.
Yeah.
I can go, I need a little bit of feedback. He's in the middle of the room. It's not coming out of the PA. I can jack that up and he's got reactive feedback coming off the rig.
Nice.
Yeah, just those little nuances. I'm trying to make the player feel like he's got everything he's always had.
That's great.
I never want him to feel like, where is it?
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah.
Like I say, he's got so much to think about delivering all of what he's delivering to everyone vocally and everything else. So he doesn't have to think about the guitar so much or the bass or whatever it may be that I'm helping him with. So,
sure.
Yeah.
So what, okay, explain all this jazz up here.
So the last bit of Brian's guitar rig, I use a fractal controller just to do quick recall of a couple of presets. I have a slapback delay for a rockabilly song.
Okay.
I have a high gain and low gain manipulation if we need to just cool everything down or just jack it right up. It's all on a button, quick to go, but it's the same models and design, just gain structure.
Okay, so like the slapback, is that actually coming from the fractal? Is that delayed?
Block is in there, but it's only on the Marshall side so that you have wet and dry.
God, you thought of everything.
I'm silly. I'm very silly.
That's great.
I have a little bit of audio background from many years ago, so that helps me go, how do I like to hear it? And I like that kind of not washed out by an effect, but actually complementary to what the guitar is trying to do. And the effect is working within that dynamic. So that's the last of that. What we ended up having to, when Brian took on the bass, we have a wireless signal, it's coming in, hitting the tuner splits. So we have a clean signal to a DI going straight to front of house. We have another clean signal that's jumping off that going to the compressor, which is now line driving our basement on stage.
Oh, cool.
But we're using the SGI to get us there because it's just less cable. We're using our infrastructure of our subsnakes, just way more slicker.
Yeah.
And we can do festivals way quicker.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But the heart and soul, when Brian was trying bass at first, we were just doing DI and it was like, it's got a little, not a lot of life. Got one of these, Mike Taft was amazing at Ampeg, just sent me one over and it was just like, this is what you need. Tweaked it, 2 seconds later, Keith's on the other side going, yeah, that's what it is, just a little growl, the SVT aspect of things is just like,
Yeah.
We got some definite majesty in the sound, if I can use that word.
Yeah. But it definitely, you can use that word.
It's got some power, you know? And it's not what I thought it was going to be at first. And it's great in the ears. Front of house uses it. And then when you put in a little bit of that basement mix, we got a mic on it and a load box.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got all these timbral things to just make this beautiful picture. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so that's what keeps me excited and doing my thing is just like, how can I make that guy's life easier? And we have sonic enjoyment.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm all about sonic enjoyment. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
That's why we're all here, people.
Exactly. We love tone and we want to pursue the tone. Yeah. So that keeps me driven. Yeah. That's why I come to work.
See, that's professionalism, people. Mm. It's a rare exotic bird to see these days.
Oh, okay. You're very kind, Joe. Yeah.
Well, man, I'm thrilled we're here. So,
I'm so excited you're here, too.
We want to check out Keith's rig now. So, yeah. So. Thanks.
Pleasure. Thank you for your time.
Now I'm with Keith Scott. Hey, Keith, thanks so much for joining us
today. It's a pleasure. Nice to meet you guys, and I appreciate you coming.
Man, absolutely. Okay, I want to talk about this guitar. I was shocked to learn you're running 12 through 50 on your strings.
Yeah, I've done that for many, many years.
In standard tuning?
In standard tuning, yeah.
That's in Stevie Ray Vaughan range.
Well, funny you say that, because we actually did a gig with him in the early 80s in the Bottom Line in New York, and we were co-billed.
Yeah.
A terrifying experience just from having to go up after him.
Right.
And rightly so. But anyway, we swapped a little conversation between sets. We did two nights there. And I asked him, so what do you, he was down to E flat. Right?
Yeah.
He said, I'm 13 to a 52. And I went, ooh. And I look at his, biceps. But I thought, well, I'm standard. I'm in 12 to 50 at that time. And I've been doing that for about 40 years or so.
Yeah.
But I'll have to tell you, I learned that from another Canadian guitar player who's very well known, Paul Dean of Loverboy. And I was probably running 10s or 11s in the old days, in the nightclub days up in Vancouver where I'm from. And I heard that he was doing it, and he said, oh, the tone and the tuning just gets completely sorted out. And I thought, well, I'm going to try that. And I went up, and my fingers bled for about 3 weeks. But once you get used to it, and I'm running in those days I was running a 70 Strat with a floating bridge like this.
Yeah.
And I got used to it, and I never really went back. Although some guitars, like specifically Gibsons with a slightly shorter scale length, I think they benefit for me going down to about 11, so 11 to 48 or something.
Yeah.
Like I have an SG in the rock here, which just has, because I just think it's there's something better about it. I don't know what it is, it just feels better. So, but yes, I have been running this floating bridge,
God.
Five springs.
Okay, so it cuts like a knife.
Yes.
That you were that setup?
That exact same setup.
God, yeah. That seems impossible. I mean, even hearing it when it first came out and hearing that big dive, God. And it sprang back in tune.
Hopefully.
Yeah, well, on the record.
To which take?
Yeah, on the record it's in tune.
We have a funny little story about that one, because I think it was the three of us, Brian and I and the producer, engineer Bob Clearman. And I was, trying different things, and it just wasn't there yet. And Bob left to take a call, and Brian said, don't listen to him. Just do what you do. And he pressed the record button. I just, I'm just going for it. And I went, and it kind of, that was kind of it in one blast. And I might have added one thing.
Really? Yeah. Oh, God.
But, that's kind of the process at times when you're stuck for ideas. And I guess the blessing is that, in, let's say, Brian and I's case, it was always kind of a team thing. We're always together.
Yeah.
And if I wasn't getting it, he would always have something creative or something that would help, And, and when we started working with Mark Lang in the early 90s, the same idea, between the three of us, we put our heads together. If he wasn't getting it, I wasn't getting it, then somebody would come up with something, you had to. So,
right.
But it was like, it was always a team effort in a lot of ways, so in that case.
To me, it's those melodic lines you come up with that are just, God, like every solo you play, like you can sing, you know? It's like they just stick in your mind immediately for fans, I think.
Yeah, and some of it is pretty well serendipity, and I guess that's part of it, that stuff just happens and you think, well, why did I play that? I have no reason. My brain went to that. I saw where it was in the scale, you know what I mean? You're seeing the notes as they're happening, and it's kind of like a dream state almost. And
yeah.
I don't know if other players share the same experience, but you really don't know a lot of times what's going to come out. I don't study it or anything. And I think, like you mentioned, cuts like a knife. Brian and his partner, writing partner Jim, would always demo the songs. And I lived really close to Jim, and he'd say, come on over, we're working on this song. It would be in Cuts Like a Knife. And I would just take two takes and go blast something just to give it some whatever. Yeah. Some whatever. And we used that pretty well as a template for when we went to go do the actual recording with the guys in the room and everything. So I have to say that we did borrow heavily from the demos through most of those early records, but I'm pretty sure Cuts Like a Knife, there was no thing, you know? That might have just happened. I don't know, you know?
It was a while ago.
It was a while ago. Still got most of my faculties, not a lot, but anyway. But you know what I mean? It's a lot of it is just comes off the top of your head, and especially at the demo stage, and it's really difficult. Once it's kind of set in your mind from the demo, it's really hard to break away unless you thought it stinks, you know?
Well, and one of the kind of wonderful liberating things about a demo is you're kind of playing like it doesn't matter very much. And on a master, you play like everything matters.
Yeah, hopefully. But you're right. You know, there's a free looseness about the playing that it feels good.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
And if that's the case, that's all you really want, is it to feel good and to be the right thing.
Yeah. And I love that you guys are just a four-piece, just throwing down, man. You can hear. There's no place to hide. Everything is.
I try to hide, but I didn't. But after last night's show, maybe I should have. No, I was. It was fine. We had a great crowd, and where the heck were we? Gosh. In Duluth.
Oh, okay.
It was really great, actually.
So this old 60s Strat, is this the one you got as a kid? I know that.
No.
That when you were a kid, you bought like a 60s Strat.
I did. I had one. The first good one I had was I bought out of the one ads in the newspaper. It was like $200. I took the bus to the guy's house and there was no case in the bus with this. I mean, it was kind of a funny situation. But you know, you're 17 years old. You think, oh my gosh, I have a Strat. You know,
right.
I can be Ritchie Blackmore now.
Yeah.
And Brian and I met him at Madison Square Garden for the first time ever. Last week, and I literally almost genuflected because he's been such an influence on me. It was people like that that made me want to be in a band, you know, like to have fun. And if you ever watched him, if you're old enough, in the 70s when he would come out with Deep Purple just kind of go for it.
Just reckless
on a
abandon.
Visual level too, just like, okay, I'm gonna smash everything up tonight. And it's like, oh yeah. But you know what I mean? It's such an impact on an adolescent, you know. And I wanted to be kind of a little bit of that edginess, have fun and don't worry about it. And to him, not only his musicality, which was extraordinary.
Right.
There's guitar solos from the 60s that he did with Deep Purple, and the early records are still, I'm still like, come on, man. Where does it come from?
Yeah.
Like, you know the cover that they do of Kentucky Woman, the Neil Diamond song?
Yeah.
Try playing that solo like he does.
Oh.
It is
impossible.
It's tough. It's tough work. I mean, I'm sure there's 50 million guys in Nashville that can do it, but I'm just saying, it's not like a simple blues scale. It is in a way, but it's got all these weird influences.
And you know that he blew it down just probably one take,
because
and
that's
go.
All they have the money for. They have two sessions and your record's done and you get out of here. So, but just really extraordinary. And it was more about the attitude and the feel and everything. But there's just one. And, you know, and I think one of the benchmark ones for him, for us, was the Lazy stuff, you know, off of Machine Head, which is just, you know, it's beautifully done, you know, and it's just so much fun to try and nail. Okay, where is he? Is he down here? he's up here. You know, it's the same thing. You know, where is he on the neck? It's just impossible to play that. Right. Now, whether that's been designed to mess with all our minds, I don't know.
Yeah.
But he was something. And anyway, that was my first guitar. This, I'll tell you the story about it. I had been playing custom shot Strats. It was just in the 90s when we had been working with Mutt from Waking Up the Neighbors. And I thought, I had a nice 64 at home and a 59 maple neck. And a few other things that I relied on to do sessions and that. And I was in LA the couple days off, and I went down to a place called Guitars R Us. If you remember that place?
Sure.
And Albert, and he had like five of these on the wall.
Yeah, back, those were the days.
I got a credit card, I forgot. So I literally sat in the store for an hour and tried and played, you know, maybe three or four of them. And I thought, I like the feel of this one. And I took it home, and it looked literally like this one when I bought it. It looked like this when I bought it.
Wow.
Almost, you know, with a little bit of wear.
Sure.
But I never really played it. I kept it at home. I had real trouble. I had it refretted by a friend. And I just couldn't get it to sit. It was one of those long lost puppies that you just don't touch because there's other ones ahead of it, you know?
Sure.
Then I gave it to Craig, who used to be my tech on this side. It's Brian's tech now. And he said, give me a couple of weeks with it. And he worked the truss rod, and he got it to sit, you know. And I started playing it on stage about 15, 20 years ago. And I thought, okay, it's finally in a nice spot where it'll do pretty well, whatever you want it to. So. Hence the result from all the sweat
sure,
and nonsense.
Yeah.
Sadly.
Go, oh, good,
so, honest. And there you go, that's why.
More good, honest
get him
wear.
Out, kick him out of the store. Anyway, but that's kind of the story with this one.
Beautiful. Well, hey, speaking of old guitars, show me these, your gold. Yeah, look at this.
Okay.
I think Dan's got your old Les Paul back there.
We're keeping it pretty simple right now. And this is a, it's a 1954.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a funny story too.
Oh, okay, I want to hear it.
It was a gift from Brian, a Christmas gift in 1989 when you could buy them for a song.
Yeah.
Literally, I mean, it was probably $1,500 then, or, you know what I mean? I mean, that's kind of the story. I think in the early 90s, it just became astronomical for whatever reason. But yeah, he found it, it's all gold. It's really beat up, but you know, it's solid. There's no neck break on it.
Wow.
I had it refretted. And it's basically what it is, this different bridge. It would have a plane bridge.
Yeah.
It never had a trapeze thing on it. And of course the machine heads and the nut were done a long time ago. But yeah, basically what it is, you know.
Do you feel much of an adjustment going between the Strat and the short scale?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's the subtleties and as simple as where the electronics are and everything else.
Right, but it takes
scale
a minute,
length,
right?
Scale length is another one, but I don't ask it to do too much. It's like it becomes featured in the rockabilly section. And maybe another song when it gets called.
It's such a perfect companion to Brian's 295, you see?
Yeah. I mean, I did consider that. When he started using those, maybe about 10 years ago, up to that point, he was more, he had a 6120.
Right.
He had out quite a while with the Filtertrons.
Yeah, the
Gretsch. And that through the Vox amps were, I thought, was magic, you know. Yeah. But he loves the 295s and he's really comfortable and yeah. So we kind of aesthetically, yeah, that'll work.
As
the other one does. I brought this reissued gold top. This is like 30 years old, but it, you know, it does it.
Oh yeah. Is that Summer 69?
I'd use it on Summer 69.
That seems like the one got to be a humbucker in the set, right?
Yeah, and Brian would play all that on his Norlin era Les Paul in 1984. That would have been recorded. And that and the great Bob Clearmountain dialing up something that the audience wouldn't be horrified by. So. But he was really special for us. And you know, it's. I felt like at that time, when you take from coming out of the 70s into the 80s, which is where we did a bulk of recording into the late 80s and early 90s, but Bob was a big part of it, and you always felt like whatever you had there in the studio, he would somehow make it magic, and he always did. And he kind of helped define Brian's sound over time, you know? So
sure.
This is like, it's just part of your experience, I think. We get to work with really great people, and I think you become, you know, a little more experienced and aware of what you need to do what you need to do, you know. And a simple thing like, okay, in 1983, after Cuts Like a Knife came out, we opened up for Journey straight across America, like 4 months.
And wow.
They were arguably the biggest band in America at the time.
Sure.
And to get that kind of exposure, opening up for arenas full of people, multiple dates in cities every night pretty well. You couldn't have asked for a better situation. The emergence of MTV promoting your situation.
Oh, yeah, you guys were on
it. It was
MTV
all kind of happening at the same time, you know, right. And it, you know, you hopefully ride these waves that have you know, public acceptance and all that. And we were very fortunate to have all that in place for us. So,
well, it seems like those records, they translate so well live, like Heat of the Night, you know, like all that stuff. It sounds like you can hear just four guys in the room just throwing down.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was. I mean, there was a demo, and you know, you had myself and Brian and Mickey Curry on drums, and at the time, my bass player Dave, Canadian guy.
Yeah.
And you just had a great engineer and watching over us, and just get some kind of vibe, you know, and get it to tape, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was what we need to do. Today is obviously different. You know, everybody has a studio in their home pretty well.
Oh, right, right.
But, you know, those people, and it was, I think it was about the vibe in the room a lot of times, and especially Brian, you know, he was, you know, vocally there. Oh. He was, you know, just the, it's just an energy that exists. Since I met him when I was 22 and he was 17, I mean, he's always had this dynamic energy that was like, whoa. I mean, I'm pretty laid back generally, but you know, it's a positive thing, and it's really been a positive thing for me. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what you try to capture. Something in the some days, and it's not there. You know?
Yeah.
And what do you do?
So. Well, even just during the sound check, God, you could feel it right there, man. You guys are just so locked in. It looked fun.
Well, we try. You know, we don't have to try. We just have fun. You know, after all this time, you know, you have songs, and you know, hopefully people come and. And it's a different city every night, and it's always a little bit different. But the thing is, you know, look at what it is. It's just people having fun in the audience, hopefully, especially with the sort of emotional climate in the world right now. Yeah. It's a little bit scattered, and, you know, maybe it's a bit of levity away from the everyday sort of whatever you have to manage. You know?
Sure. Well, I know we've got to get you guys ready for the show, and I'm going to be at this show tonight. I can't wait to watch it.
Well, that's really
Keith,
great of you.
Hey, thank man, you. Such a pleasure. Right. I'm a huge fan.
Likewise.
Love your music.
Thank you so much.
All right.
I wish you guys the best. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for watching.
We're going to talk to your team and move on from there. Okay, now I'm with Dan Ely, who is Keith Scott's tech. Hey, Dan, thanks for being here with
You're
us.
You're welcome.
Show me another one of those old Strats.
Got two other custom shops. We're starting to bring this one out more just to give it some love.
Sure.
Because I think at some point we'll retire that 63. Because it's seen some things, right?
Yeah.
Same thing. That's a reverse wound pickup. Same setup. Really cool. It's just a custom shop reissue.
Yeah.
Again, five springs in the back.
God.
Floating. They sound almost identical. Like once it's gone through the whole rig and everything.
Sure.
But yeah, this is just coming out for a couple of songs. Just getting it played in, like we're taking some finish off the neck.
Yeah.
Just to get rid of that like
sure
gunky, sticky feeling. But yeah, it's super cool, man. Real fun.
Okay. Show me another one. Why
you
not?
See the other Strat? Yeah.
Yeah.
This one hasn't actually made it out onto any shows yet. It's a completely different flavor. Again, this is another custom shop. It used to be white.
Let's
see if I can show you that. I think it got painted white for one of their records when they were touring everything in a white finish, I think.
Yeah.
And then it got refinned in black.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite cool. You know, it feels comfortable, really nice. Again, same setup, five springs, super heavy on the trim. Yeah. But yeah, it's not coming out yet, unfortunately. But it's just, you know, maple neck, different flavor.
Yeah, sure. The feels just in case.
Yeah. But it's fun to have more stuff on the road, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So that one's really fun. And that's kind of it, really.
What about the nylon? The classical, yeah.
This comes out for one song at the moment called Woman. It's like a Ramirez.
Yeah.
Just super fun.
Okay, Ramirez with stock pickup in it?
Yeah, it's got a, what is it? It's a Fishman.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty cool. But yeah, one song. Watch him play it. It's really
cool.
He's a monster. Like
I will be here tonight.
Yeah. It's really cool. He's amazing. Yeah. It's nice to see this come out and him do something.
Oh yeah.
In a completely different flavor. And you're like, okay, cool, love it.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's that. Really, pretty simple. Again, standard.
Sure.
Nothing too exciting going on with that.
Okay. Well, then let's talk about this stuff over
here. The rig.
Here.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. What's going on here?
The beast.
The beast. Right.
I guess it looks a lot more complicated than it actually is in theory.
It does look complicated.
I guess Keith's main sound? Well, I guess, where do you want to start? Do you want to start from the front end or do you want to go backwards?
Oh, let's start at the front.
Okay, so coming through the wireless, blah, blah, blah. no one needs to know about that. That's really boring.
Yeah.
His main thing's a tube screamer.
That's his
like core tone, yeah. We call it global, is just the tube screamer. It's really cool. It's cranked pretty loud. That does most of the work during the gig.
Is that like almost an on all the time sort of thing?
Yeah, pretty much.
I bet he's been using that since the 70s.
Yeah, they sound great. They're a classic for a reason, right?
Yeah, right. And it's not like a modded or fancy one. It's just a...
I think it might be like a Black Label from the 80s, maybe. Yeah. I know we've got a bunch of them that we kind of swap out, but yeah. That's been the mainstay.
Okay.
We've got a few spares kicking around. Like, I think we've got some like the Maxon stuff.
You sort of have to, yeah.
Yeah, like there's a few different options should we ever lose that. But that's his main kind of drive sound. And then if he's playing anything clean, he normally switches to a compressor. I don't think he plays anything that's just straight. So I guess it's kind of difficult without knowing what else is going on. So his rig kind of, it's a bit of a hybrid rig. We've got the Fractal, which is like a Marshall Plexi.
Yeah, which is
on one side, which
kind
is
kind of a sweet spot.
Yeah,
forever.
Right?
Yeah.
And then the other side's a Vox.
Yeah.
So they're panned hard left and right. And then on stage, we've got the Bassmans, which are really cool. There's also a load box between the cab and the speaker. So there's all sorts of flavors that everyone in all departments can take and use as much or as little as they want.
Sure.
Which is a great, it's really cool to have all those options.
Oh yeah. To have the blend of the Fractal and that old basement.
Yeah, super cool.
And the second basement is like a redundancy if one dies.
Yeah, that's just the spare, the cab's live. So we've got both the cabs on just for a bit of, you know, just feel on stage, right? Because it's, you know, it's a rock gig. You need that.
Yeah,
like,
yes.
It's fun.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you can get a bit of, like, feedback and stuff from the amps, which is fun.
Right.
But, like, clean, it's, like, his comp. Like Run To You is just a Boss compression sustainer and a Boss chorus, which is hidden at the back here.
Yeah, what is that chorus?
It's a super chorus.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, man. Like, it's all pretty...
I love that it's, just that straight in, you know, just I mean, what you think.
You could walk into a shop and buy all this stuff.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Which is really cool. And
I love that.
Which I really like, you know. There's a few other cool things, like his, like, kind of big rhythm sound is what we call it. It's still the tube screamer, but with a brown source added in as well.
Oh, okay.
Which is really cool because you kind of get that like, almost like phase reverse.
Yeah.
And you get this new kind of like sound coming. It's massive. It makes it sound huge.
Yeah, cool.
Everything else is kind of for like fun stuff really.
Okay, so what else? There's a tremolo in there.
Yeah, we've got a trem. We've got a TR2, which is cool. That's not being used at the moment. If there's any other like really old songs where he's using that, he'll kick that in. The auto filter's really cool. He uses that in Only Thing. It's like a couple of hits where you get these like wow, which is really fun.
Yeah.
This is quite cool. So we've got a hyperluminal dark glass bass compressor, which sounds amazing on guitar.
Really?
He'll kick that in for a solo just to get that really like squashy kind of fat warm sound,
sure,
which is really cool.
So you've got the mastermind here and he's got a second one up there.
Yep.
And so he can in real time switch, and there's some stuff you're switching.
I think I'm doing probably about 80% of the switching for him. If I forget anything, touch wood that I don't. Yeah. He can also do it.
Yeah.
I think there's also a few moments where it just feels nice to step on something.
Yeah.
You know, like when you're on stage, you want to step on a pedal and hear it happen.
I want more.
Yeah, so there's a few moments where Keith will do that, and I think it makes sense for him to do it because it's like you get that kind of, whoa, I'm hearing it.
Yeah,
all, which is really fun. So I'm doing most of the switching. I'm trying to think of any other like fun stuff.
Yeah, tell me about this. Yeah, what's okay? You got the tube rotosphere.
This isn't coming in yet. It's there for fun. It sounds really cool. We've got like the brake, which we can control, which is super cool. The Prometheus is really cool. It's
kind of like an
envelope kind of resonant filter thing that we also use in Only Thing.
Oh, okay.
You'll hear it when he plays the intro. It's got this kind of like cool like... It's almost like you can kind of hear the filter sweeping as he's playing.
Oh, cool.
And then I'll kick it out. So that's quite fun. This Octoland fuzz is really cool. I've just put that in. So we're finding a place for that. But yeah, again, that's just to thicken it up. It's like, I think he's always wanted that kind of like tone bendery buzz to have in the back pocket.
Sure.
That's being thrown in. And then
the Strymon El Capitan.
El Capitan, yeah, another classic. That's not used as much. I think for Keith's solo stuff, we're using this TC rack delay here.
Okay, wow.
Which is really cool. I can't really find anything that sounds the same as that.
Yeah.
Super reactive. It sounds really cool. That'll be on all of his big solo, really driven solo stuff. This is here just as a spare. Like, we're getting this dialed in to sound the same because they're getting harder to find as
sure.
well.
Oh, yeah.
We've got the rack wah. That's like the first thing in the chain.
Yeah.
So he's got control of that up on stage, so he kicks that in. That's pretty much
yeah.
it.
It's You're all, right. It is not as complex as it
No, it's not.
As it
it's,
seems.
No, which is... This I love all this stuff. I think I love really complex rigs, and it's sometimes just like the basic stuff just works really well.
Oh yeah, well and like, God, all those hits were. I mean, what I love about the guitar tones through all of it, it just sounds very guitar amp, just awesome, no tricks, straight awesome.
Yeah,
rock and
like
roll
and
guitar
all
tones.
The playing does the talking, right? There's yeah. some really like you know. The drive stuff sounds really cool, but I think it just really lets Keith do his thing.
Yeah.
His guitar tone's amazing.
Yeah,
it's so cool.
And he it doesn't feel like he ever gets super dirty. There's like a clarity to it.
No, it really cuts through. It's, yeah. And it's really defined. Try and avoid adding in too much low end.
Yeah.
Just, there's plenty of other people who've got that territory,
yeah,
right? Like, you don't
right.
need all that woofy bottom end to cut through.
Right, right.
Which is nice, and you just hear it. Like, whatever yeah. he's doing, you know that he's playing it, and it sounds super cool.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's also cool. We've got all yeah. the amps and stuff, and
yeah.
yeah, it's a fun setup.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Well, Dan, thanks so much for taking us through it,
You're
man.
So welcome.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, man, we're going to be at the show tonight. Can't wait.
Wicked.
Yeah.
Awesome.